Everyone enjoys a good time, and a good time online is even better. At KingTractorPress.com, fans of comic books, webcomics, and graphic novels have been having a blast since 2006. The home of new webcomics like sci-fi thriller Gene Gardens and the humor-laden Daddy's Girls, KingTractorPress.com offers online fun for distinguished audiences. And when you visit KingTractorPress.com, be sure to check out King Tractor's Five and Dime, where you can get buttons, pens, toys, and lots of other cool stuff. Visit KingTractorPress.com today.
You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, July 29th, 2012, on this Webcomic Beacon newscast with, from BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
And from EvilSpaceCat.com, Marie Terry.
Hello, all.
And I'm your host, Thomas Revor, from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. And here's what's in the news this week. Before we get to our top story, we here at the Webcomic Beacon newscast wish to offer our congratulations once again to Giselle Lagasse, artist extraordinary for such webcomics as Eerie Cuties, Magic Chicks, and Menage a Three, for the issue of Archie Comics, the actual print comic, Archie Comics, that she has drawn is released, and it's out in the stores now. So run down, go pick it up. It's a terrific piece of art. The story? It's Archie Comics, folks. But let's get on to our top news story. Marvel Comics has a consultant, and we use this term in quotes, consultant, who has been harassing news journalistic sites for doing their job. What happens back at Comic-Con, Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige revealed that the studio's second biggest movie for 2014, following Iron Man 3, of course, was going to be The Guardians of the Galaxy, and that one of the characters would be part of the current incarnation of the Guardians of the Galaxy, Rocket Raccoon. But even before he released this news, Latino Review apparently caught a little bit of information this way about what's going to happen and started reporting on it. Well, now Marvel is saying that this leak was unauthorized as opposed to authorized leaks, and they want to know who did it, and no one will get hurt. That's right. Latino Review reports receiving a very passive-aggressive email on the matter and replying with a challenge. Maybe send us a more realistically written form letter and we'll start to care. Well, they got it. Sent from an independent security consultant, quote-unquote, who claims to have worked for Marvel since 1982, it accuses the editors of Latino Review of disseminating, quote, confidential, non-public information concerning Iron Man 3 and Guardians of the Galaxy. There's a lot more going on with this stuff, and if you wish to find out more about it, go ahead and head over to our source for this over at volume1.net, and they will have more information about it. We will definitely be discussing this in our discussion portion of the program. And now let's go ahead and head over to our buzz section. Eric, what's happening with the buzz in the comics world?
Well, top on our buzz story today is a debate that's going on between CNN and Bleeding Cool. The story started out with a post by Joe Peacock complaining about basically booth babes. He talks about how he hates that there are these geek girls that are these girls pretending to be geeks that they're really not. He says, quote, they decide to put on a hot costume and parade around a gay group of boys that are notorious for being outcasts and don't get a lot of attention from girls. They feel like celebrities. They're a six in the real world, but when they put on a Batman shirt and hit the local fan convention du jour, they become a nine. He berates these girls for being posers and not true geeks. In a response, Kate Coulter on Bleeding Cool says that basically complains that this is a really bad habit of, you know, blaming girls for dressing up like costumed characters and enjoying it, and that this is part of geek culture, and to say it's not is really kind of out of line. She says, then to have another loudmouth beak go. Another loudmouth boy geek douchebag jump on the mainstream media outlets and tell us what is and isn't a geek, and then tell us it's our fault that women put on that women with porn star proportions are hired by certain company to represent geek products. She goes on to say that that's just not right. This is the way things work. So it's a debate back and forth. What is a geek girl? What is sexy cosplay, right, wrong, or other? Our next buzz story comes from us via Robot6 and is posted on WarrenEllis.com. Warren Ellis occasionally has a challenge called the three-panel open, where he asks people to submit comics that are just three panels, and he posts them on his site. It's trying just to gain community and get people interested. And it's going on right now, so you can send a post over to Warren Ellis, and he'll post it on his site, get a little bit more exposure. Third buzz is coming to us from Keyboard Smash and found via Escher Girls. And this is a talk about dynamic posters, poses defined by gender. At Keyboard Smash, they've been doing redraws of comic book covers showing what is a more realistic proportion, and they've received criticisms on that. According to the post, I've received comments and responses wherein readers said, all of your redraws are far less dramatic than the previous drawing. They lack energy, dynamism, and are far more static. And she goes on to show what dynamic poses for men look like and what dynamic poses for women look like, and showing that while her redraws fit within the drawings of the previous pose, if you really wanted dynamic poses, you can't have a distinction between men and women. That's it for the buzz. And back to you, Tom.
Thank you. I keep having the time warp run through my head when you talked about that story. And do the pelvic thrust. It'll really drive you insane. Well, apparently it's driven some people insane. But we'll be back with more stories and other news right after this.
Okay.
Okay. And we'll pick up again in 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Let's head over to our other news reporter, Murray Terry. Murray, you're taking over the business section this time. What do we have over there?
Well, we've got three stories in business today. The first one is coming to us from paidcontent.org and is talking about the downturn in ad subscriptions and revenues, but it's apparently a bit of a gold rush for some other people. It seems that some of the more complainers about how revenue fell, especially in the early years when we had our first dot bomb and everything fell off the internet, they are congratulating themselves that they are now creating more revenue through subscriptions than they are necessarily needing ad revenue to support it. The Financial Times, for example, is reporting that for the last half year that their revenues have declined. However, they have actually sold more subscriptions and surpassed their print circulation for the first time. The New York Times is reporting something similar. Well, there are other ad-challenged areas that are suffering, notably in more in the old school groups than the new ones like Facebook and Tumblr and Twitter and Foursquare, who are actually finding that they are not having any trouble growing their ad sectors. So it seems to be a bit of a mixed bag, and that the older medias are still having some troubles and struggling with ad growth, but some of the newer ones in social medias are actually finding it to be a growing market for them. So it's a bit of push and pull. Our second story is about freemium models of product development in particular. And this is, if you're not familiar with what freemium is, it's when you offer a free product and then hope people will adopt it and upgrade their to a paid subscription or buy the product after having tried it, essentially, or being given it, or buy additional add-ons and value-added type things, which is actually what a lot of online comics kind of use, is that we offer our comics obviously for free and hope people will buy books or buy other stuff on. This particular article, which comes to us from GigaOhm.com, is basically explains the freemium model, but also is talking about and how it may not actually be the best way of offering a product and why. It's quite an in-depth article. You probably want to read it yourself if this particular topic interests you. But essentially, it is suggesting that it's actually better to start with customer need, not necessarily the product, and to look at how you can offer value and how you can capitalize on that value right away. It gives several examples, including Survey Gizmo and a few others, to what is might be a better business model. But I'd suggest probably that you read it, and the link is, of course, in the show notes. The third article in Business is Why DC and Marvel Will Never Truly Target Female Readers. And this is actually a pretty extensive set of articles. The original source is from comicsbeat.com and vancouversun.com. And Robot 6 actually has something on it as well. So there's three fairly lengthy articles on the whole thing. Essentially, it is basically saying that, in fact, women in comics is actually pretty extensive, and that they are making quite a bit of headway into the world of comics, just not necessarily with the big two. A lot of independent comics and a lot of other areas in comics, which we are not as traditionally looked at, are actually sporting quite a good, healthy crop of female creators and contributors and writers. And it's sort of that the two big superhero niche is kind of like one puddle in the greater ocean of comic making. And that while it may not necessarily be where it might be something that is continuing to being targeted to men and to boys, there is a vaster picture where women are in fact actually making great inroads. And it talks about a number of artists such as Cyril Olex, I can't even pronounce that last name. Olexkik, I can't pronounce. It's one of those weirdies. But Faith Erin Hicks is another one that's mentioned, and Laura Ennis. My names. There's quite a few that are mentioned. You can go ahead and read the articles and see that it's actually, it looks like women are actually making some pretty big inroads. And actually, there are even some signs that Marvel and DC might be trying to get with the program. Apparently, there is actually a fair amount of pressure that they talk about in a couple of the articles that they are getting. The message is coming, whether they like it or not, that they need to look a little bit more at the female talent. So it's kind of heartening as a fellow woman in comics to hear this. But that's all we got for the business section. So back to you, Tom.
And this just in, apparently women do web comics as well.
I've heard of this Kate Beaton character. Maybe someone should do an article on her about how she's a woman in web doing web comics. I think people want to hear about that.
Well, enough of that dead horse. Now I've got to take over and head over to the education division right now. We've got some great stories over here. Most notably, our top story for education is the great Stan Sakai, best known for the creation and production of the comic Usagi Yojimbo, which is, what, it's reaching 15, 20 years now, 30 years? Good heavens. Apparently back in 1991, he did some Facebook comments about a story that he did for Amazing Heroes issue number 187 about how he creates Usagi Yojimbo. And it's a great look at the creative process that he uses, from original idea to fleshing out and the idea to the actual story to the art to how he does the art. It's a for anyone who does comics of any sort, it's a great look at the way that someone who's been in the business for a long time does these things. And on a similar note, we have a story over from sgrblog.blogspot.co.uk talking about the sale and creation of t-shirts. That's right. One of the big markets which we used to have with webcomics is the creation of t-shirts. And the sales have been going down a little bit. Here's the reason why and the process that he uses for making said t-shirts. Not just the actual physical creation, but the idea process as to what deserves to go onto a t-shirt to be sold. Third up, we have a bit of a runaround. Apparently, the mass media has finally noticed that,
you know, there are comic books out there.
On a story that we've got that opens up primarily with the delay of a Batman issue because of the mass murder over in Colorado. There's also a story over there about from Dave Sims, the creator of Cerebus, the everybody's favorite angry little aardvark, and talking about his views on crowdfunding. This story can be found over at bleedingcool.com. And finally, in our education section, it's been 10 years since paid content has been around. That's right. Back when Friendster was the hot social network, when publishers ever doubted that ebooks would ever do anything, and Netflix thought that DVDs in little red envelopes was the future, paid content was one of the big things that was going on back then. Over at paidcontent.org, they take a look at the past 10 years and a lot of the changes that have gone into the industry for both them and for others. So go ahead and head over there, get a few ideas as to how to raise some revenue for your comic. And now, I don't have to do the tech section. Yay! Eric, you go ahead and you bore us with what's going on in tech today.
Well, what's going on today is talking about Twitter, mostly. We have two articles about Twitter and one about Google. Our first article about Twitter is about Twitter blocking Instagram's blocking Instagram's API. Now, this was something that Twitter threatened earlier this in the month, but now it seems like they're actually following through. They're blocking third-party API. So it's something that was going to happen, but we didn't really think Twitter was going to go through with it, but it seems like they're going to shut down other sources on their site. Now, this is kind of strange since Twitter's popularity comes from all the APIs that use Twitter and not many people using the Twitter website itself. The question will be, can Twitter encourage people to use their website and their interface over third-party interfaces by doing this, or will Twitter simply commit hara-kiri with this and destroy themselves by preventing people from using the program the way they want? Our next story comes from Paid Content, and this one is talking about Google's arguing in court that scanning of books does not hurt the author's sales. Google is taking the line that scanning books and allowing them online for free does not hurt the sales of the books, that it falls under a library exemption, and that they are allowed to do this. Now, this is an argument that has been taken up in the past and hasn't really been truly vetted yet. And the question is digital scanning the same as a library, is something we've talked about before. But Google is saying the scans don't hurt, they actually help promote the book, something that has been proposed in the past. We'll see how this holds up in court. Speaking of court, our third article, coming to us from GigaOM, is talking about the Twitter joke conviction being overturned. Now, this happened about a year ago. Paul Chambers posted a joke on his Twitter account, essentially saying that he was upset with an airport and going to blow it up. This was posted in the UK and in the UK there are laws against this, and he was referred as promoting terrorism, basically, and given a fine of about $900. The court case has been now thrown out and of court, and it has been overruled. So it seems that we have actually won a victory for free speech and sarcasm on the net over legalism in that case. And that finishes us off for the tech section. Back to you, Tom.
Well, it's the first time in a long time we've had the words legal system and joke and never mentioned Charles Carrion.
Yeah. I'm hoping Marvel hires him for their suit against the reporters. I think he has the experience for that sort of case.
It sounds like it. But let's go ahead and head over now back to Murray for a look at some of our oddities and tidbits. What have you got for us today, Murray?
I got two items for you guys, and the first one is that there is a new free digital magazine about digital comics for the iPad. This is coming to us from comicbeats.com. Is a digital magazine, Infinity, is being produced apparently by Panel 9, and they sell digital. They produce and sell digital graphic novels like Eddie Campbell's Dapper John and David Lloyd's Kickback. But there's actually an actual magazine, an actual printed zine, I should say, called Infinity. So it actually has a bit of a background. It is got a lot of apparently very good content with some roundup pages and pages of comic news and interviews. And it's generally looks like it's a cool magazine. So if you've got an iPad, check it out, download it. It's free. And the link is down in the show notes. The second item we have is that DreamWorks has gone and bought the licensing company Classic Media. Now, what this means is that DreamWorks now has control of the rights for quite a large library of classic characters, including the Harvey and Gold Key Comics libraries, in addition to properties such as The Lone Ranger, Lassie, Where's Waldo, He-Man, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Fat Albert, a whole bunch of them. There's just a huge library. This is going to be an interesting move, I think, on their part. If you're looking for the full story, go ahead and check out the link in the show notes. But this probably promises to be something very interesting move by DreamWorks. So that's all we've got today in the tidbits. And back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Marie. And at this point, we're going to go ahead and take our second break of the show. We'll be right back after these words with our discussion portion of the program. See you on the flip side.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebComicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. It's time for the discussion period. Joining me today is, from evilspacecat.com, Marie Terry.
Hello, everybody.
From bladebunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings.
From the Animation Aficionados podcast, Ben Carver.
Hey.
And, of course, there's your lovable little host, me, Tom Revor, from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. Of course, we couldn't help but open up with the top story for our discussion being... Is sexy cosplay wrong? The debate.
If it's wrong, I don't want to be right.
This is the same type of story that comes out every so often. Well, women only dress like that because men make them.
Well, no, it's not. It's not.
No, not they the don't.
That's not the story. This guy is saying women only dress that way to get attention. They're not really geeks. And women should be ashamed that they're just doing this to get attention, and they're pretending to be real geeks. That's what Joe Peacock said.
Well, you know, let's be honest. All guys know that if you see a woman that is that hot wearing a Spider-Woman costume, there is a percentage chance that she doesn't even know who Jessica Drew is. Well, guys know that, and we're okay with that.
If there is an ugly girl wearing a costume that she doesn't know who it is, that's a ridiculous... It's this ridiculous, let's judge women based on their appearance sort of... philosophy.
Reverse discrimination, apparently.
Exactly. Well, and to say that they're not geeks because they happen to be good looking. First of all, I've worked with a number of good women in the computer industry who happen to be geeks. The best thing that I had happen was last year's Comic-Con. I came up to somebody, and of course, seeing great costumes and the other end of the spectrum as well. I had someone come up to me in a costume, and I had to compliment on the costume. I said, great Silver Sable costume. Yeah. And she said, thank you. I've had everyone coming up to me and saying, great Emma Frost costume. You're the first one who knew I was dressed at. That right there says she's as big a geek as I am. More power to them.
There are
how could you confuse Marie?
Wait, Marie, what did you have to say?
I was there are girls who put in ridiculous amounts of time and effort to sew these costumes. Yeah. The cosplay community is extremely passionate about what they do, and there are a lot of girls in it. They really enjoy it, and it's not just. You know, it's not just to necessarily look sexy. I mean, there's a lot of cross-dressing and stuff, too, that occurs. But they spend hundreds of dollars and thousands of hours on some of these costumes. If that's not geekiness, I don't know what is.
Well, they don't remember all the ships of the Federation. And that's the only thing that geekiness is. Don't you know
but
that?
But they're not.
That's not.
But they're not dressing up.
Marie, you're absolutely right. Even if it is, it's not just throwing on a Captain Kirk T-shirt and a black pair of pants. Even a lot of the bad ones, but there are so many great costumes that people are either professional level, either actual professionals or that level of quality that put so much time and effort into them that these costumes are terrific. It's not like having 100 fat Princess Leia slave girls around here where you can go and buy the costume, or these people who go dressed in, as I said during the break, bondage and dominance, leather and rubber costumes. At a science fiction convention that have nothing to do with it. These are people who are exalting the genre, both in the cosplay and in the costuming itself.
Yeah, well, you can really tell, too. It's like you can tell when people are just, you know, buying their costume off the rack or whatever and wearing it just because they want to fit in with whatever their friends, and they're not really that good of a seamstress, or they don't have the money to pay for somebody else to make their costume or whatever. But they want to be a part of it. They want to, you know, they want to be a part with their friends. They want to pose for pictures. They, you know, it is kind of its own almost geekdom to be a cosplayer. It yes. really, really is.
Exactly.
And you can't just lump all of the good-looking chicks that because they happen to have really nice bodies that they are not passionate about what they're dressing up as. You look like all the Hetalia and the Homestuck cosplayers, and they will kill you.
Absolutely. Now I will say it's not like the people, not like the booth babes these are people hired to wear the costumes.
Yeah. Is there anything wrong with booth babes?
No.
If you're you can look at it from three. If you're talking from a feminism point of view, and Marie, you'll have to interrupt me if I'm wrong on this one. From a feminist point of view, yes, because they are using their sexuality rather than being an actual full blown person.
But oftentimes the costumes aren't even that good.
Yeah, but that's ridiculous. First of all, that's an old definition of feminism. It's just a job. I mean.
It is a job. I mean, they are just promoting it. I personally don't find a problem with it. I don't really care. I've actually heard, though, some people who have hired booth babe types actually find it to be more of a distraction than a use. Like, the only thing that maybe sometimes that they, you know, they do that is helpful is sometimes they can get people to take flyers or stuff they might not otherwise take. But I, for the most part, I don't care if there's a booth babe. I don't care if there's, like, you know, I love seeing people in costume. I think it's very festive. I mean, I go to a cosplay convention as one of my regular conventions that I go to. And it is amazing to see how many different forms of geekdom there are and how engaged women are in these geekdoms. Now, I do think there are girls out there who are posers, who do pretend to be girl geeks, and they're pretty easy to spot. Honestly, and some of them irritate the crap out of me.
Why?
But,
oh, absolutely, and that's not just in the women. I mean, at Comic-Con, there were several people around dressed as the thing du jour. I mean, I got so sick of seeing Captain Jack Sparrow at Comic-Con 3 years ago because everyone was dressed as him.
But it wasn't
because it was things that they bought off the rack and they just went to do it.
What's wrong with here's my question. What's wrong with people who are not deep into the community, they're buying a costume off of a rack, and they're going to a convention just to have fun and dress up. What's wrong with that?
Just to have fun and dress up is fine, but it's when they try to pass themselves off as a particular geek in a fandom, and they've got it all wrong. Like it's irritating. It's like having somebody trying to tell you your business, and they've got it completely backwards.
Well, it's I agree with you. It's one of the reasons why I can't stand the Beastie Boys.
But that's an interesting analogy.
Here's my question. You know, when someone's dressing up in a costume and going down to a convention, let's do the simplest thing. Someone's dressing up as Slave Princess Leia. That's something you can buy off the rack. It's simplest thing to do, and you're going to a convention. Is there anything wrong with the fact that they're not really engaged in it? They're still going to a convention. They're still trying to have fun. Do they have to be an expert in the geek community to go to a convention? Are we saying only people who are experts can engage in this hobby?
And even that, I mean, let's take it from two standpoints on that. One, you've got the Star Wars. Star Wars is a general mass market audience thing, not just a specific genre. You cannot say, well, I'm a Star Wars fan. Well, you're not a real Star Wars fan. You don't know who the fifth planet of the third soul is. I mean, no. It doesn't matter. You're a Star Wars fan. But on the flip side, these are people who are going down. They've paid their tickets to go through. If they were going down and just patrolling outside the convention center in their costume saying, look at me, yeah, there might be a problem with that. But they're going through. They're participating in the whole thing. A convention there is a celebration of whatever the convention's about, whether it be science fiction, fantasy, comic books, or whatever. So they're participating. And by God, they get the right to do it, male or female. And I think that's the whole problem I have with this article, is they talk about the women who do this, and there are just as many men who do it.
I don't have a problem with somebody who is just interested in fandom, who watched an episode of Firefly and decided they liked it, and they heard there was a convention and decided to go with their boyfriend or their girlfriend and check it out or whatever. And, you know, maybe they did dress up. Maybe they threw on a brown duster and, was like, oh, I'm a brown coat. But when they start, when they're actually, this is what I mean by poser, not necessarily somebody who's just interested in the fandom, who may not be an expert, who's maybe just peripherally getting into it and being like, this looks really cool, I want to get into this. That I have no problem with at all. I have no problem with people exploring fandom, because I think it's great that there's new people coming in and trying things. I mean, I would love to cosplay, but I'm too self-conscious about it. And I have many things that I am a fan of. But when somebody comes to me and says, I am a girl geek, and then I said, oh, what's your, your favorite show? And they're telling me, Desperate Housewives. I'm like, what? And I'm like, oh, well, what are you going for? Oh, I'm just going to, hang out and look attractive, kind of thing. It's like, well, that's not really what it's about, but okay. So what are you into? Like, are you into role-playing games? Are you into collectible card games? Are you into, like, TV shows and movies? Like, what are you into? It's like, oh, yeah, well, I like Star Wars, because, like, Captain Kirk was cool. And well, what?
let me explain my Beastie Boys example I gave here. When I was just out of high school, I remember I was watching VH1 because I had nothing to do that day. Yes, those were very sad days of my life. Anyways, they showed this Beastie Boys behind the scenes thing about a music video they did. The one where one of their members dressed up as Captain Marvel, the DC Captain Marvel.
Thank you.
And basically, in the behind the scenes, he said, yeah, one of our guys dressed up like Shazam because we're nerds. We're really big fans of Shazam. So one of us dressed up like Shazam. And I'm like, I started screaming at the screen, if you dress up like Shazam, you dress up like a wizard with a white beard and robe.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
They were posers.
I'm sorry. There is a certain level of, the comic book guy of posers saying, I'm sorry, you are not worthy to be in my community, sort of thing. If someone is dressing up, they're dressing up. Great. I don't care if they know the first thing. They're dressing up like a character. That's fun.
The problem I have with the Beastie Boys example is they were trying to give themselves nerd cred by saying that when they didn't even look past the cover of a damn book. They just said, well, the cover says Shazam, so the character has to be named Shazam. They were textbook posers there.
Okay. Well,
yeah, that's my issue, is the honesty of where you're coming from. It's like, if you come and you say, I'm a girl geek because I hang out with geeks, that's not really what a girl geek is usually sort of defined as. It's just, you know, it's like there's somebody who's interested in something or has a particular interest, a very strong one, in something a little eccentric. But, you know, just to say that I'm, you know, and then these are girls that are, I can't even describe it. You'd have to actually meet one of these people. Whoa. But it's like, it is irritating to be a geek and have somebody trying to basically horn in because it's cool now. You know, in a way, it's
exactly.
like, it's just irritating.
Exactly.
I have no problem with people going to a convention and dressing up because it's fun. And then basically be, I'm here because I want to dress up and it's fun. Or I'm here because I want to dress up in a character and I thought it would be a really fun character costume to make because I wanted a challenge. I don't know much about the actual character, but I really like the look. I can deal
with that. I'm okay with that, too.
I have no problems with this. No problem at all. No problem even buying the costume off the rack because I can't sew worth a damn. And wearing it to a convention where it is fun because, you know, you're into anime, you're into science fiction, you're into video games. I have no problem with that at all. What I have a problem with is when you try to pretend to be something that you're not or into a fandom that you are not and you get it wrong and then you're like, and you're doing this to people who are very intimately familiar with the subject matter and expecting them to buy it.
It used to be that nerd and geek and spaz, I mean, all these things were pejoratives. They were names that you call somebody to make them feel bad. And now, with the age of the geek, damn you, Hardison, is becoming the more popular thing. And a lot of the people who look down on the nerds and the geeks and the Trekkies and the Star Warsians and whatever are wanting to become part of it because it's now becoming more and more of the mainstream thing.
And it
can rankle the people who took all that scorn for all those years to see these people try and horn in on our territory, damn it.
See, my opinion is welcome. If popular culture wants to glom onto geek culture, welcome. You know, we're not – I mean, I think there's two things. First of all, don't be the jocks that beat you up in high school. Don't be exclusionary because people are exclusionary to you.
Exactly.
And second of all, if popular culture starts to love this stuff, then your hobby becomes more popular. So, yes, let the posers come in. Let the actresses looking for jobs dress up as Wonder Woman. I'm fine with all of that because it raises the entire culture.
Having I don't problem with actresses dressing people. Up as Wonder Woman. I just have an issue with somebody coming along and trying to tell me my business. I have the same problem when somebody comes along and is promising me a web service and a design service or something like that, and they talk, and it's pretty clear that they don't actually know what they're talking about, or they're trying to be a manager, and they can't do it. I just have an issue with people who try a little too hard to be something that they're not, and they're not honest about it. Like, if they're coming into the fandom and they want to just have fun and they're like, I don't know much about this, but it looked like a lot of fun, I can live with that. I have no problem with that. Come on in.
Before we go on to the next topic, I want to go ahead and leave with one thought that was here, and that was in one of the quotes that we had from Joe Peacock. And he says, quote, "Very six in the real world, but when they put on a Batman shirt and head to the local fandom convention du jour, they're instantly become a nine. I don't see a problem with that. I just say, take the shirt off and be a 10.
For that one.
And
true, but because a lot of these girls are hot no matter what. So,
exactly. And I'm sorry, if you're going to cosplay, do it in something that's for your body type. I'm you know, there should be some quality control. Don't be 400-pound Princess Slave Leia, especially if you have a bunch of back hair.
Why don't you like why don't you like any of my costumes, Tom?
I'll be honest, one of the best costumes I saw was a guy in his late 20s who was very out of shape, and he went dressed as the Penguin. Perfect costuming for his body type. More power to him. But let's go into our next one, and this one I'm going to let Marie take the point on, and that is about defining that a dynamic pose is defined by gender. Marie, you're our local artist, with all respect to Ben, you're our local female artist. You go ahead and take point on this one. What is right or wrong with this article, and why?
Well, I kind of only got to really skim it because it wasn't on one of my things, but I was looking at it, and it's interesting because I, like, cutting at the outset when you're looking at it that you have these very typically sexualized poses which aren't actually that dynamic, and then redrawn with like the opposite gender of what would be acceptable for that. I thought that's actually kind of interesting. Now I got a chance to look at it, is what is expected of a female dynamic pose versus what is expected of a male dynamic pose, and how anatomically or situationally it wouldn't actually work. Like there was a good point about the one Psylocke cover, which I think I actually have that issue somewhere. And it's, or that is a she Psylocke crossover, or Psyblade crossover, whatever. I remember seeing this picture before, I know this, but having their legs tucked up like that when you were jumping is probably, like, unless you're like really at the top of the jump, your legs, you know, are going to be coming, definitely are going to be down more, like in the secondary version with the two men poses. But there are, like, I mean, I'm looking at the artwork, at least in this particular, set, and it's like, yeah, they're still, like, yeah, that's solid-ish in terms of it, but like, I mean, there's still other ways that they could have been handled. I like the last one. That was actually, I like that one with the guy in the front and the girl in the back. I actually like that pose better. But again, it's one of those things that, like, you know, these have all went through editors. This is what the editors decided. This is not necessarily what the artists originally came up with. I've seen concept work where they're often, you know, the poses are actually more dynamic, or they are more realistic, and they get massaged into something less so for either the editors or whatever, you know, because of the shape of the cover or whatever. I mean, I'm like kind of looking at it going like, it's interesting, but
well, let's break it down to a little more simplistic thing. I mean, when you look at a good looking man, what is the first, second, and third things in that order that you look at with the guy?
When I'm looking at a good-looking man, I'm looking actually probably at his face first off, and right, then body is more of a secondary thing, and I'm looking for good proportions. I'm looking for musculature that is not extreme. I'm not personally into the big, super muscular, veiny dudes. I kind of find it gross. I'm a little more interested in the athletic physique. Like, in the third example of the ones that she redrew, the
I'm just talking about you. I mean, we'll say first is the face. Second is the general proportions of the physiology.
And yeah, probably look at the proportions of the physiology, and then I'm going to be looking at body language. I'm going to be like kind of seeing like is it proportionate? Does it work? Is there anything out of like, is there anything that sticks out that says no to me? Like, I mean, that's sort of what I would look at a thing. If I'm actually looking at a dude in real life, I'm actually probably going to look at his eyes, then his face, then his body.
Okay, Ben, I'm putting you on the spot now. If you see a good-looking woman in real life, first, second, and third things you look at?
Eyes?
Yeah,
her face.
For Ben.
I'm gonna look at her face. I'm going to look at her proportions. I'm going to...
This one's for Ben.
Okay, eyes,
I'm going to get...
hair, shoulders, hips.
See? I mean, the general consensus has generally, again, generally, this is broad brush, folks, is that men look at, in order, hair, boobs, crotch.
I said shoulders and hips.
No, I know what you said. I'm saying that it's a general thing. Women look at an overall package.
Ben's only partially a man, that's all.
Yeah.
Well, those things fall between those things, you know, between the two shoulders, you know.
Yeah, Marie pretty well went along with what the generalization for women, what women look at men is. I mean, they look at the face, the eyes, and the general body structure. Men look at the sexualistic characteristics, and again, in general, in the studies that have been done, and that is what they're doing. When you have Superman posing on a cover, it's generally not for the women.
No.
It's Superman or Batman in a pose that most bodybuilders would have difficulty getting into. With women, it's whatever thrusts out their boobs or their butt.
Yeah.
Usually they're going to try to do both.
The real question here is Marie, have you ever bought a comic that you knew was horrible? Just god-awful. Everyone had told you it's an awful story, awful, you know, just an awful comic, just because it had a hot guy on it.
I can't say that I have bought one because it had a hot guy on it, although I have bought a comic, specifically manga, that people told me were terrible. I have collected anime that people have told me were terrible in particular genre, which is very popular.
Because
not
of
yaoi, but more shonen eye. But yeah, but it had beautiful
men. I knew it.
Yes, it had beautiful men. It is a terrible guilty pleasure of mine that I do love the Japanese style beautiful man. But you know, the hot guy stereotype of North American comics is not actually what I usually buy into as far as a hot man is concerned.
Yeah, but
right, and even what comic books consider as hot guys versus what reality considers hot guys. I mean, you're not going to be seeing a Mark Wahlberg on a cover of a comic because his proportions are not superhuman.
Actually, Tom, that reminds me of a funny quote by Gail Simone once. Gail Simone once said about an issue of whatever it was that she said something like, "Nightwing's ass is very important in this comic."
See, and
there are girls who do look at a guy's, you know, butt before they'll consider the rest of them, but there aren't, you know, I mean, most of them look at the face and then they start looking at the body.
Like I have said for years, ever since I got into comics, the most perverted people I met in comics were women.
We just hide it better.
No, you don't.
I mean,
there is a reason that we'll go back to geek girl, geek guy. There's a reason that the geeky things that girls are into right now are the novels, why they're the Twilight and that sort of thing, and the geeky things that guys are into are the comic books. I mean,
at least you didn't say 50 Shades of Grey. Thank God.
I was going to go there, but I mean, there is a reason why there are. I mean. No offense to anything, Twilight is dreadful. And no offense to anyone, many comic books are dreadful, but they carry themselves based off of a certain demographic and idea.
Take a look at it. I mean, we all make fun of Rob Liefeld. He is an absolutely horrible artist, but he draws pontoon boobs and he draws backs that bend in no realistic proportion so that she can show the ass at the same time. He can't draw feet, but he has scads and scads of hair, and he draws guys who look hyperlithic. I mean, with muscles that have muscles and have muscles.
And he's actually consistently employed.
And actually, Eric had an issue about a month ago with boobs and ass in the same panel.
Oh, yeah, I had an artist give me one of the boobs and ass pictures, and I had to write him back, and I say...
Their torso was destroyed, kind of?
Yeah, the torso was rotated literally 180 degrees, and I didn't ask for this. The artist sent it to me, and I said, dude, I'm not doing that. turn her butt around so that she is attached at the waist.
And then I said,
she's not
farting.
Her hips don't swivel that way.
Yeah.
And then I sent Eric a picture that Neil drew of the, quote, perfect comic book superhero when it has a front ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was pretty good. But yeah, but I mean, the thing is, guys are visual, and visual things will make guys be stupid. And this is the point.
I think that's actually the point. Because there's actually a biological difference on this, and I know I read this, is that the girls are visual too. Girls will get interested, just like guys get interested, but the difference is that men actually do get stupid when they get interested. Yes. Women don't.
Yes. Well, and let's break it down.
Not always.
We're going to get into a full-blown discussion here. If you take a guy and you have two pictures of him, one in a nice suit, not spectacular, but a nice suit, well-dressed hair, and then you've got another of the same guy with long hair, the leather jacket, the bad boy look, a lot of women... In fact, I will almost say almost majority of women will go for the bad boy. Men,
is he wearing motorcycle pants?
You can have a woman dressed in a very nice outfit, and then you put her a picture right next to her in a very nice outfit with double D's, and that's the one that men will gravitate to. Men, again, in general, are going to be looking for the sexual characteristics, real or not, which is why silicone implants are so popular with guys. Women are going to be looking more at the attitude and the atmosphere around a person. I mean, like Marie said, the general look of the guy as opposed to does he have a big package?
Yeah, that's they're interested in like there's a lot more like it's interesting when you start looking at sexuality studies in terms of the difference between men and female, because obviously that plays into this whole thing of depictions of what, you know, what the girls are looking for, what the guys are looking for. As the girls is often a situational context to arousal. There's like you have to kind of have a context, yes, some kind of story, some kind of construct, even if it's flimsy as hell, as Yaoi has taught us. But, you know, there's got to be some kind of situation suggested, whereas the guys can get into it without necessarily having that context.
Yeah, and publishers don't care if people find something attractive or not. Publishers care if people get stupid and ignore all the obvious flaws in what they're selling.
How many guys actually get to the likes and dislikes of a Playboy centerfold?
Yeah. Yeah, they just want to encourage, you know, the logical brain shutting down and saying, can I really afford this? Is this really something I want? Is the story really worth it? Does this make sense? They want that part of the brain gone. They don't want that part of the discussion when you're handing out money. They just want the part that goes, ooh, pretty, and takes it.
And now that we've talked about all this, I mean, this goes back into what the original article was about. I mean, about the dynamic poses of male characters versus women characters. There are different things that people look for in them. With a man, men looking at men are going to look at strength, power, and that's defined in comic books by bulging muscles that people really wouldn't even be able to cross their arms if they had.
And usually a pretty aggressive body stance.
Yes. Women, they're looking for TNA with a come get me type of stance, the body language. Women will be looking for something else. So you cannot put male characters into female characters. I mean, and vice versa. It doesn't work.
Well, not for the male audience, no. But they actually, if you do look at like some of the more like yaoi-ish type mangas, is the boys do end up in highly feminine poses.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've got that in real life with the metrosexuals,
and girls are drawn to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why the largest viewing audience of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy was female.
Yeah, yep. And that's another conversation for another day, but there is a sort of fear of female sexuality in the society that is slowly going away. But one of the reasons you haven't seen these images targeted for women is because it makes people uncomfortable much more than images targeted to men in this society.
This is true, to some degree.
And on this, let's go ahead and go to our third topic, because I know that we're probably running out of time, and that is about freemium having run its course, where you give a product out and hope that people pay for it later. And I know, during the break we talked a little bit about this. I think all four of us here disagree with this, because this is basically the webcomic model for beginning and young webcomics, let me say. Because you have to put your product out there. You have to get people to like it before you can actually start saying something, as opposed to, you know, I've got a comic that's coming out. Why don't you pay me now, and then I'll give you stuff. It doesn't work that way for us.
Yeah. The difference, the article goes through, and it makes the point that if you're selling everything, you make more money. So it used the example of chocolates, and it said a Hershey's Kiss or a gourmet chocolate. Now, you could sell the Hershey's Kiss for free and have the gourmet chocolate be a dollar, or you can sell the Hershey's Kiss for a penny and the chocolate being 50 cents. And it's saying you would make more money when you're selling everything. You know, freemium doesn't work when you're giving away something that people can use. And if they get the kiss, well, they're perfectly happy with that, and they don't go on to the premier product. That's using an example of something that people need. They need to eat, or they die. You know, maybe they don't need to eat chocolate, but they need to eat.
Well, so the chocolate example that they give is a bit spurious, because let's forget gourmet versus normal. You're looking at this, and they've got two groups. Group A, which is 1 cent Hershey's Kiss, and the 26 cent, you know, 25 cents more of the premium Ferrero Rocher chocolate. mm-hmm. as opposed to Group B, which had a free Hershey's Kiss versus a 25 cents, still 25 cents more, mm-hmm. of the gourmet chocolate. First of all, you're looking at a Hershey's Kiss, which is a little bitty bit of chocolate, and the gourmet chocolate that they were selling for 25 cents is about three times the volume. People are going to want to immediately gravitate towards the larger volume.
Well, no, the argument is if they can get the cheap one for free, they'll just take that.
Well,
and you will make money.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, if people are going to pay for something, they're going to immediately gravitate towards the larger item. That's the way people are. If you're giving something away for free as opposed to a larger item, even if it's smaller, people are going to go for the free. There, I mean, there are hooks, checks and balances that we use and stuff like that. Okay, you give away one item free, but then you say, okay, you need to pay for the rest of the items here.
Yeah.
It's a loss leader, and that's been a long time thing.
The problem is with this article, and the problem with the criticism of the freemium, because there is a lot of business criticism from the freemium, and even the much lauded coup of Penny Arcade says the freemium model can't work. And the reason is it's not understanding the basic concept that with entertainment, when the idea of entertainment is you get people invested in the product, and then they want more of it. And that's when you start to sell them things, because it's almost not the freemium model, it's the drug dealer model. You give them the first taste for free, and then when they're addicted, you say, okay, well, now you got to pay me something for more of this.
Marie, it sounds like you want to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, the article actually goes back and focuses on consumer need. It's saying that you should focus on the consumer's needs and provide a product that they will satisfy their needs, or that, you know, whatever value that creates value to them, and then sell them that product. What the freemium model, at least for things like webcomics entertainment, are doing are creating a need.
Yeah.
They are basically going out and manufacturing a need in a certain group of people, to which then can be other products can be sold. But, like, I mean, obviously for something like chocolate or like physical products or maybe even business solutions, some of those types of things, I mean, there are needs already there. And yeah, sure, you can sell them right away. But for something like an entertainment optional buy, like a, you know, like you need to get a lot of people invested in what you're doing. And the easiest way, obviously, to do this is to go by the freemium model. By basically saying, okay, here's the, yeah, essentially the drug dealer thing. Here's your first, you know, here's your regular crack dose. But if you want more, because they always do, you know, here's what, you know, here's some optional stuff to buy. And that way too, you also, like, people feel they're A, supporting you, and B, like, it's more of a personal way of, I don't know, I think it's more personal to say, like, okay, here's some more stuff. Here's more stuff I've done for you. You know, yes, you got to pay for it, but, you know, you're still getting all the regular stuff for free, no problem. But, you know, here's this extra stuff. And they're like, oh, this is great, we can help you along, and we feel good about ourselves, and, you know, we get what we want because they're paying for, you know, additional material or whatever, and then it's like, you know, it's no big deal for them.
Exactly. I mean, if their proposal here was completely correct, the print comics would be out of business completely ever since webcomics appeared on the scene. That's not the case.
No.
This is, to me, the freemium thing is like the taste of whatever city you're in, festivals they have. You go out, you try some of the foods from the different places, and they're little bitty tiny samples to where you like the food, and you go and you get the food at a full course. Webcomics are the same thing. You try this, we will distribute this, and then you can either donate so you can get more of this, because if you don't, we'll go under and you won't see any more of it, or you get this extra stuff, as Eric here has proven works wonderfully with some of his comics.
And didn't work wonderfully with others, but yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's still, you know, like, any product has a, you know, a risk of failure. Any product, you know, any idea that anybody comes out with, you know, there's always the chance that, you know, some things will stick more than others, and there's no real way to predict that. I mean, if we knew how to lay the golden egg, then we'd all be millionaires, but we're not. We don't. We have to throw things at the wall and see what sticks. And this, and like it said, like, this is the, like, in the article, it's like there's a pretty significant adoption, and in order to make that way that they were talking in the simplistic way of the model working, is that every webcomic would have to charge, not just like yours, but like every single one. Like, nothing could be free anymore, ever, to make it balance out the way that they say in the statistics.
Exactly.
Of the model,
freemium works in specific cases when the business model is done right, if it works over short-term very well for all products. But if you're talking a long-term where you're just giving something away, expecting nothing in return for it, that doesn't work, period. They are correct in that, but that's not what they're saying. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Definitely.
But and on that note, we're definitely giving this away free, which is why you listen to commercials. There are two breaks. And we're going to go ahead and bring this to a close. So I want to go ahead and thank everybody who's here. Ben, thank you for joining us. Ben Carver of Animation Aficionados, which people can find where?
At animationaficionados.com.
And Marie, we can find Evil Space Cat and the rest of your work over at?
EvilSpaceCat.com.
And, of course, everybody's favorite, Eric Kimball. Eric, where can we find your works at?
BladeBunny.com and also to DreamOfDragons.com.
And that leaves me, your host. I'm Thomas Revor of 910 Comics. It's 910CMX.com. And if anybody's interested, we're going to have a special announcement next week coming from 910. So stay tuned and be sure to listen in for that. And on that note, we'll see you in the funny papers.